All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. Cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
We're debuting a new theme on the show today. We're going to do it every so often. It's called a roster rundown, in which the entire episode, we will check in on every player on the Heat's 15-man roster. They'll usually be broken up into two parts, breaking up the ball handlers and wings from the front court players. And we'll do them when we have an unusual amount of time between games, which is usually a good opportunity to review the roster, not unlike what coaches will do in the middle of the season. And right now, as we wait in the post All-Star weekend, between the All-Star weekend and when games start ramping up again, is a good time to sort of, it's not quite mid-season, but it's a good time to kind of sit back and say, all right, where is each of these players? Where is the team in general? And what is going to be needed to make that final push for the postseason, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of these players have been in and out of the lineup due to injury, but I think we've seen enough of a body of work from everybody so that we can really ascertain what their impact has been and what we'll need from the team moving forward as far as their ability to make contributions to make Miami's postseason push.
So we'll start with the backcourt players that are logging the most minutes, and that's going to be Josh Richardson and Goran Dragic. Let's start with Richardson because he's actually leading the Heat in minutes per game right now. And if I'm the coaching staff, if I'm, say, Eric Spoelstra and his assistants, and I'm looking at Josh Richardson, how far he's come already this season. We've given him that contract extension, right? That four-year contract extension. He's locked in, if we want him, at around $12 to $13 million a year. And given the way he's developed and progressed already this season, that looks like it could be a bargain next year and going forward if he continues at this rate of development. So for Josh Richardson and for the Heat, I think that's going to be the main thing right now is obviously there have been games, especially that December stretch where they've relied on Josh Richardson, not only for his defense when Justice Winslow was injured specifically, but also what he was doing on offense, bringing the ball up, staggering minutes between Dragic and Richardson to make sure that there's always a ball creator on the floor at every point of the game. And that is something that I think should be continuing as this in these final 20 plus games is allowing Josh Richardson to handle the ball, allowing him to continue to develop, even if you don't think he is a pure point guard, which he's not, but giving him that opportunity to get better at that while giving him also the opportunity to create his own shot and score and potentially lead the Heat in scoring for these next few games. Because David, maybe, I don't know if you agree with me here, but I think the Heat were at their best when Josh Richardson was really the kind of the best player on the team.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think he feels most comfortable when he's kind of been given that role. And I think that's a big part of it for him is understanding that his role is going to be a bigger load than he's ever had to deal with. And I think that's where he's most effective is understanding that he can make contributions, not just defensively, which he's always done throughout his career, but offensively as well, where he's expanded his game and been more aggressive in his attack to the basket and the way he takes his perimeter shots. You know, we've talked about confidence being an issue for Josh in the past. I haven't seen it as much this season, although there are still games where honestly, he just struggles and you wonder whether or not it might be something psychological. But again, every player has bad shooting games. He just needs to continue to be aggressive, looking for his shot. Now, it's going to be a challenge for him because I think with the return of Dwayne Wade, with the way that Goran Dragic is the lead ball handler and with so many other backcourt players, Wayne Ellington, Roddy Magruder expected to come back, et cetera, it's difficult for him to kind of really get a stranglehold on his role. And I feel like he doesn't want to rock the boat. He doesn't want to be aggressive. Imagine how much more difficult it would be if Deion Waiters was on the roster. So right. there's a lot to break down there. But for Josh, he just needs to understand it's going to be a tight rope to walk as far as maintaining that kind of balance with your teammates and not overstepping your boundaries, but also kind of being aggressive and taking on as big a load as possible.
And he's having his best season by far of his career. And that's not, I'm not breaking news to anybody, but just to sort of go over his stats, because we haven't done that yet, but 13.2 points per game so far, Shooting 38.5% from 3-point range, really sort of last year, remember in his sophomore year, he kind of slumped here and there, and he started to get that 3-point shot towards the end of the season when Miami was just sort of everybody was hitting threes. He was shooting 33% last year after shooting 46% in his rookie year. So he's back at that 38.5% clip, but, and that's at a more sustainable rate, right? He's never going to shoot 46% again from 3-point range, probably, unless he like transforms into Steph Curry. But, at 38.5, that's a really manageable, clip, a really good clip. I mean, that's right where you want him to be. 3.3 rebounds and 2.9 assists. Those are both career highs. He's probably the only player on the team who's getting steals at a consistent rate. And I think that's going to be a major part of just the Heat going forward, trying to create easy offense by creating more steals. And if I'm Spoelstra, I want to tell Josh Richardson, you know how Wayne Ellington feels like free to take a three at any point in the game? I want you to feel free to go after a steal at any point in the game, because more times than not, if that leads to increasing his steal rate from 1.3 steals a game to two, if you can basically double his steals per game by doing that and create more transition opportunities that way, and you kind of allow that for guys like Richardson and guys who we'll talk about later, like Justice Winslow and players like that who can create that and get in transition and have that athleticism to do so, that could be huge. And if I'm the Heat, I know I need to increase the rate at which we are turning over the other team, and Richardson might be my star player in doing so.
You know, it's an interesting situation there, and I wonder, you know, I think part of Miami's defensive scheme is basically just limiting shot opportunities rather than going for turnovers, and you wonder whether or not they might need to change that dynamic a little bit, you know, especially for a guy like Richardson. Like, if he goes for the steal, at the very least, him and Richardson and Winslow both are quick enough that if they go for the steal and a ball handler is able to get past them, they can both compensate quickly with their speed and alter the shot or still disrupt any kind of shot attempt. So it would probably behoove Miami's defense a little bit more if they're able to be a little bit more aggressive and go for those turnovers that can lead to quick fast break opportunities. So I'm curious to see if they'll make that change at some point. Nothing that they've done so far indicates that they will. I'm just curious if they,
I think that's the way they play with Whiteside, right? I think you're right, because they purposely do not go for steals. They are a very conservative defense because they want to just run guys off the line and force them into the paint with Whiteside. And you kind of have to do that with Whiteside because, all right, Josh Richardson goes for a steal and misses it, right, on a pass. Well, now all of a sudden that player who he was supposed to be guarding has, 8 feet of space in front of him between the 3-point range and, a long two, basically to get a shot off, and you're putting Whiteside on an island at that point. So I get that. But if you have a guy like Bam Adebayo at center, that allows you to switch a little bit more. Bam Adebayo is more adept at getting onto the perimeter and guarding guys on the outside 3-point line. And maybe that allows, and if Richardson or Winslow, whomever, like, would miss a steal, maybe that allows, Bam to get out on the perimeter and just do some help and recover at that point. And everybody could sort of, is athletic and fast enough to sort of recover back onto their man and just sort of get back into a defensive set there. So you're right, but I do think they're at a point right now where the offense has been such a struggle that they might have to rethink their defensive principles a little bit. Let's move on to Goran Dragic here. Coming off of his All-Star weekend.
Still not comfortable saying that, right? Like, All-Star Goran Dragic just never seemed like a possibility.
And it's funny that we're saying this about an All-Star, but for him, the main thing is just finding some more consistency. I mean, he is, again, the theme here is that Miami is struggling to score on offense. This is one of the worst 10 teams in the league in offensive rating. And it looks like that when you watch them. That's not a surprising stat, right? Yeah. And if you look at his last few games, for example, I mean, this is a guy, if you're an All-Star, I always picture an All-Star of, and look, he got into the All-Star game because of injuries, but whatever, he's an All-Star. I think of an All-Star as a guy who is a consistent player who could just be relied on a game-to-game basis. And look, we love Goran Dragic on this show, and we love his leadership and everything that he brings to the table. But as far as scoring points, right, which is just something we don't tend to talk a lot about with Goran Dragic, as far as just putting points on the board, he just doesn't do it at a consistent rate. I'm going to go through his last, six games here. 18 points in Miami's last game before the All-Star break against Philadelphia. He had 18 points in that game. Then that was 28 points before that, 6 points before that, 30 points before that, 13 points before that, 33 points before that, and then 10 points before that. I mean, he's going from like low teens to high 20s, low 30s, literally on a game-to-game basis. I would rather him just score in between. Like, I'd rather him just score 24 points a game than just to have a 33-point game here and a 30-point game here, but in between those is a 6-pointer and a 13-pointer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd want that kind of consistency, although, you know, on a nightly basis, it could, you know, it could change what you'd need out of him. You might want him to be that kind of guy who can take over a game. You know, I think the question also is, you know, and strangely enough, after having discussed Richardson, I don't think that Dragic is best suited for the role. I honestly think it's Richardson. As far as like the player most capable of having an explosive game offensively, it's probably Richardson, just because he can score in a number of ways that Dragic cannot at this point in his career. He's not nearly as quick as he once was. He's not getting to the free throw line as much as he did last year. But I want to bring up a point that was made to us by one of our Patreon supporters yesterday in our mailbag about how Goran seemed a little uncomfortable at the All-Star break. And as much as we discussed it yesterday, and you should definitely go and listen to that podcast, I think one of the things that we can take away from that is that hopefully he saw how these other superstars around the league kind of handle themselves and understand their role and the team dynamic. And maybe some of that rubs off on Goran. And
I wouldn't mind if he got a little Hollywood, right? Like that absolutely. Might not, and I'm using Hollywood as a word here, but like if he just took a little bit more like ownership of like, hey, I'm an all-star, I'm gonna act like an all-star.
But you know, it's funny because, you know, when I talked to him and he told me something that I never really considered before, that his mentors in the league were, you know, Steve Nash and Grant Hill. And, you know, Steve Nash, by virtue of his game, despite his two MVP seasons, and you can debate whether or not those were merited or not, he was best as a ball handler and a guy who created offense for others, as well as kind of taking over occasionally on games. But, you know, Grant Hill at that point in his career when he was in Phoenix with Goran wasn't the same player he was. He was more of a contributor, a role player, not necessarily the dominant superstar he was in his early years in Detroit. So I think that's kind of how he learned how to handle himself in the context of the league and the team dynamic, was kind of being deferring and to other superstar players or other guys on the team, making sure that they get theirs. And we've seen that this season more than any other, at least I've noticed it more than any other, him kind of looking to other guys and getting them the ball and hoping that they'll create opportunities. And it works on some nights with Miami's, you know, diverse roster of multiple role players. But at the same time, you kind of want Goran to be capable of having big superstar explosive nights. Yeah. And we just haven't seen that enough, not consistently enough.
Yeah. And I use the figure 24 points a game. That would be really good, but I'd even be happy with 18 or 19 points a game on a consistent basis, because he's even struggling to get there some nights. Yeah. That Nash point is really interesting, because the knock on Steve Nash was always, this dude could probably score 10 plus more points a game than he does if he were to just shoot it more, because he was extremely efficient, especially from three-point range.
Right.
He just never shot it, and that was sort of the knock on him. And that was okay when Nash played, but today's NBA requires so much more from point guards, and you wonder, okay, would Goran draw? And look, that's why you re-sign a guy like Deion Waiters to a four-year contract, and why you ask a guy like Josh Richardson to take more of a responsibility offensively, is because you're right, that's not Dragic's game, and that is Waiters' game, and that is seemingly possibly Richardson's game. But let's move on. We'll get to Miami's shooting guards next. But a quick announcement that in addition to hosting Locked On Heat on a daily basis, David and I will be hosting Locked On NBA every Tuesday for the rest of the season, talking about the biggest games and storylines from across the league.
As you already know, Wes and I are credentialed reporters. We write about the NBA at large, and we're really excited about this opportunity. And we hope you are too. We hope that you'll enjoy listening in on our conversations about the rest of the league.
Locked On NBA is revamping its format. We'll be hosting every Tuesday while the original host, David Locke, and other Locked On podcast networks will be taking the reins other days of the week.
So trust us when we say it's definitely worth a listen. Lots of different topics. It's always good to know about the other teams, not just the team that you love and follow the most. That's Miami, of course. But there are 29 other teams worth finding out about. So subscribe to Lock On NBA on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
We'll end part one of our roster rundown with a pair of guys who could end up competing for playing time. But let's go to Dwayne Wade now, which I know we were all waiting for. And I think the obvious storyline now with Dwayne Wade is just incorporating him onto the team. I think there's a template set there. You know, he kind of is, in a funny way, Deion Waiters who replaced Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade is now replacing Deion Waiters as maybe a guy who you can go to at the end of games. We saw him, you know, get the ball at the end of that Philadelphia 76ers loss, right? And he almost made that three-pointer to win the game. Yeah. And the Heat are going, for better or worse, the Heat are going to go to Wade at the end of games. And there is going to be some there's going to be, you know, it's only been three games, so there's still going to be a feel for getting Dwayne Wade back involved, not only on Wade's side, but for his teammates too. I mean, you and I, before the All-Star break, we talked about, at one point I remember talking about specifically between Wade and James Johnson. James Johnson has always been like that second or third ball handler. And, you know, he gets knocked down a peg because of Dwayne Wade. Or does he, right? Like, that's what we're trying to figure out. I think there's times where we saw Wade, specifically in that Philadelphia game, defer James Johnson, realizing, like, no, this guy had a role and I don't want to take this role away from him. But also James Johnson being like, no, this dude can still do stuff and I want him to have the ball because it helps our team win. And there's going to be some of that tug and pull, you know?
Yeah, and look, I think it's up to Wade, to be honest with you. As a more experienced player who now has played with not just, you know, four different teams, you know, or three if you count Miami twice, but, you know, so many different players throughout the course of his, what, his 15-year career. I mean, so yes, he understands the dynamic better than anybody else in that roster of when to be a little more aggressive, when to take a back seat, and that's going to be a challenge. But you can't overlook also the fact, and I wonder how overblown this is, and you help me out with your opinion here, but, you know, how overblown or how realistic do you think it is that he's not in Miami Heat playing shape? Like, we, you know, the joke about him not eating pancakes anymore, whatever it was Pat Riley said to him.
Yeah.
You know, he had to kind of get into better shape. And I wonder if that's going to be the case. If now he's going to be in a little bit more, you know, a little leaner, perhaps a little bit higher endurance and maybe more capable of making a contribution at a higher level. I don't know.
I don't think it's overblown. I don't think it's overblown at all. I mean, there was a way that people did things in Cleveland, which was not the way that things are done in Miami. And I don't think that would be shocking to anybody to hear. So, yeah. You know, that is going to be a storyline. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's going to be a storyline in these next 20 plus games, is Wade getting into playing shape. I mean, there is a situation here where hypothetically he could be in his best shape of the season as the Heat enter the playoffs, you know, and that might be the best case scenario, is getting a playoff Dwayne Wade in Miami Heat shape. Something that we didn't see in the playoffs last year when he was playing for Chicago. Something that we really didn't see a whole lot of outside of just some flashes maybe early in the season in Cleveland. Dwayne Wade's best basketball this season could be still ahead of him, which for the Heat would be the best case scenario.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm looking forward to him continuing to develop that pick and roll game with Miami's bigs. Bam Adebayo in particular, I think, can thrive on that. But we've seen the connection with Hassan Whiteside paying off dividends already in just three games. So that's something to continue to incorporate there. And, you know, I think for Wade, just understanding what his role is. Look, he's not going to be as great a shooter, but he still needs to contribute some offensive. He's out there where he's no longer the kind of defender that can afford to take a seat back. He's not Justice Winslow. He's not even Josh Richardson when he's not scoring. Dwayne needs to go out there, be aggressive with his shot, but also take efficient shots. He doesn't have the explosiveness anymore. But one thing he can do is get to the line better than anybody else in the roster. Even at 36 years old, he's still got that pump fake going. And I think that's going to be a big part of it over the next few, the next 20-something games, is him getting to the line, creating shot opportunities that way, and generating easy points for the Heat, which has been a struggle all season.
Yeah, and something also to monitor with him is he's playing 22 minutes a game in the three games he played in Miami. In Cleveland, he was playing 23 minutes a game. I wonder if he's going to be at that 22 minutes per game, or if that might even get lower to maybe 19 or 20 points a game in order to just sort of save him and make sure that, look, you know, when you're on the floor, get back in transition defense. We know that's not Wade's favorite thing to do at this point in his career. Like, we need you to do those sort of things and get down on the floor and run. And you're 100% right on the money with that. Throwing lobs to Miami centers. I mean, again, Miami needs to find ways to get easy offense. Dwayne Wade isolations are probably not the best solution for that at this point. So getting him in lob situations with Hassan Whiteside, which we know he has that chemistry with already. It was his first assist when he came back to Miami, was a lob to Whiteside. Getting that with Bam Adebayo, that sort of chemistry as well, would be immensely helpful for Miami's offense. Let's go on to Tyler Johnson, who has not been immensely helpful to Miami's offense on a consistent basis. He's scoring 2.2 fewer points per game than last year. His 3-point field goal percentage is down as well by almost 2 percentage points, by exactly 2 percentage points, actually. And for Tyler, you know, he talked a lot about going into the season about finding consistency, because this isn't new for Tyler Johnson, right? And this is how role players are. They typically play at home and they play on the road. And you know, they'll be a major contributor some games and then they'll disappear other games. And that's fine if you're just a role player. That's what's expected. But when you're about to get paid $19 million a year, that's not so great, right? And so if you're Tyler Johnson, you want to start playing into that role, that those expectations are going to be there next year. They're not even necessarily there this year, but next year they're certainly going to be there, and you want to start playing up to that sort of role, right?
Absolutely. And look, I mean, it's the challenge of the NBA role player, especially for a guy like Tyler who started a number of games or come off the bench, you know, for him, it's going to be a difficult challenge, and you can't overstate that enough. It's like, you know, it takes time to kind of get a fluid sense of how the pace of the game is going and how you fit into it. It's not something that you and I understand because we haven't played at that level. And so for Tyler, it is difficult, but he also has to do whatever he can to compensate and overcome that, because otherwise he's going to be a negative factor out there, and he needs to play at a higher level in order not just to justify the contract, because to be honest with you, I'm kind of sick of talking about it, but just to be able to be the best version of himself. That's all that matters at this point. It's not about the $19 million. Nobody cares, because this year he's getting paid $5-something million, and that's, you know, that's fine, but it's about him playing at a higher level and earning those minutes and earning, you know, the trust of his teammates and the coaching staff.
I think, you know, the most, if we're going to point to one thing offensively for him, you know, I think there's that catch and shoot dynamic that was a big part of his game last year, specifically when he was sort of around either Deion Waiters or Goran Dragic, right? And Miami's offense had that slash and kick element to it. And that's not there necessarily this year. It's going to be more of him coming off of screens in a way that, and look, the Heat will run oftentimes when Wayne Ellington's not on the floor and Tyler Johnson is. They'll run the same motions for Tyler Johnson, right? Because he is probably Miami's best catch and shoot guy outside of Wayne Ellington at that guard position. Maybe Josh Richardson, but probably Tyler Johnson, I would say, slightly better. And I think expanding his game into being more than that. Like, don't come off that screen and just try to be Wayne Ellington. Come off that screen, put the ball on the floor, get to the rim, get to the line, do more things like that. And there's, you know, an element of trying to stay healthy and things like that to it. But if you're Tyler Johnson, I think that's probably where you're going to be best offensively, and probably where you can help Miami the Miami the most offensively. Let's move on to Wayne Ellington, who in my notes here I dubbed Mr. Fourth Quarter. And the reason I wrote that is because he is leading the Heat in offensive rating in the fourth quarter. He is Miami's most important offensive player in the fourth quarter. And the reason that is because they rely on him in the fourth quarter to really oftentimes shoot them, the entire team, out of shooting slumps. I mean, this is a team, and I've talked about it ad nauseum here, but that will go 3 or 4 minutes on a game-to-game basis of just not scoring. And it usually happens at some point in the second half, in the third or the fourth quarter. And you hope that Dwayne Wade, who we've already talked about, will help that. But also Wayne Ellington, they look at him to say, look, we're just going to give you the ball off of these dribble handoffs and these screens, and we need you to get us some easy buckets here, or just even contested threes, because we need somebody to score here. Wayne Ellington, 110.3 offensive rating in the fourth quarter. How does that translate into this playoff push?
Well, I hope that it doesn't, yeah, to be honest with you. I hope that Miami is able to make the evolution over the next 20-something games where they don't rely on Ellington as much. You know, the reality is that that's not been the case. That like you pointed out, he's, you know, been required to kind of get Miami back in it. They've allowed double-digit leads that they always wind up coming back, or in the case of the past three losses, wind up not being able to come back. And that's the problem, is that they get into these holes offensively, count on Wayne to get them out of, and that's not necessarily the most effective way of winning a game. It's proven that it's not. Yeah. So to me, I would rather them kind of take the foot off the gas defensively a little bit in the hopes of generating more offense, so they're not relying on Wayne in these crucial moments of games in order to get wins. Like, it's too important at this point with Detroit on your heels and teams like Milwaukee and others improving, it's too important for Miami to let games slip away. There are no more moral victories at this point. The last three games were, I think, a real eye-opener heading into the All-Star break. And for them, they have to realize that the most important thing is to continue to get wins so that they can lock up an early seed in the playoffs. I think the push for, you know, home court advantage is lost at this point, unless the other team starts slipping a little bit. It's entirely possible that Washington without John Wall or Indiana may not necessarily be able to to hold on to where they are right now. But Miami just needs to continue to win games, continue to improve. And for that, I think they need to be able to score a lot more often and not rely on Wayne as much.
And look, the scouting report is out on the Heat. I mean, what we're talking about here is not a secret in the NBA, right? You watch three or four Heat games as a scout for another NBA team, and you realize, oh, this is their offense in the fourth quarter. Yeah. It's Wayne Ellington. It's the guy who's in the three-point shootout. And look, we've seen Wayne Ellington not be as effective in these last few games in this slump that Miami has. And you can't – I think there's a tendency for Heat fans to say, oh, we just need to shoot better at a higher clip and we'll be fine. But no, I mean, defenses are keying in on Wayne Ellington at the end of games. Give other opponents credit here because they are coming up and trapping on these dribble handoffs. I mean, Miami's offense is a lot of fun when it's working, but it's kind of only it only has really one flavor here, right? And you hope that adding Dwayne Wade kind of incorporates some different elements here. But it's a lot of just dribble handoffs to eventually find Wayne Ellington for a three-pointer coming off of a screen. That's really what Miami's offense comes down to. And defenses are keying in on that, and they're limiting it to a certain respect. They're making Ellington's shots a little bit tougher, and that brings his percentage a little bit down. And even a little bit down could be a major difference, when, especially considering he's your only offense. Yeah. Our final two players for part one of our roster rundown are coming up next. But before we move on to that final segment, let's go to iTunes and see if we have any new reviews. David, how is it looking?
Well, it hasn't been too good. Our most recent review actually came in late January. But, you know, it was a mostly positive one, as Trini Heat Fan writes, "Great podcast," and then immediately flips the script and goes, "Pretty good podcast. Sometimes a struggle to create interesting content on a daily basis," you're telling us, Trini Heat Fan. "But generally a really good listen, especially for someone not living in the U.S. and with access to all types of content." So we appreciate the feedback. And I think that's the overall point, is we really want to hear from our fans. You can always tweet at us. You can always email us. But we also require, as a podcast, we do depend on, you know, listener reviews. The better, the higher the ranking, the better, of course. And you know, even if it's not, we still want to hear from you. We want to get all kinds of feedback.
Look, the last I checked, we're at 80 reviews on iTunes. Let's try to get to 100 by the end of February. How's that sound? I think 100 is like a good goal, a nice round number.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely fair. So please subscribe, download, review Locked on Heat on iTunes. That's the great way of supporting our podcast and all of our efforts. It increases our ranking, helps other Heat fans around the world. Look, not just from Trinidad, but we've got a huge following in New Zealand for some reason, Australia, other people. We're across the Pacific.
Shout out to New Zealand and Australia.
Absolutely. Leave us a 5-star review from everywhere, and you can get a shout out on the next episode.
Final two players here, David. Let's do this one a little bit different because we've kind of been just going player by player here. But I think we can really maybe talk about these two players at the same time, Justice Winslow and Ronnie Magruder here, because they might end up fighting for the same minutes, the same role as Magruder gets healthy, right? And we do expect they'll play this season at some point. And Spoelstra is going to try to work him in. We know that. That's a fact. He will try to work Magruder in certain points of the game. And I wonder if that's going to come at the expense of Justice Winslow. And look, Winslow, and right now, I think the big storyline for him is with Dwayne Wade coming in and taking his backup point guard job, which he essentially did here, right? Yeah. What's his role moving forward? And can he find that role, latch onto it, and thrive in it by the time Magruder comes and kind of stave off that threat of playing fewer minutes per game?
You know, I think it's something that we talked about in our mailbag episode again. You know, the fact that maybe he just needs to embrace that role as the team's primary defender, you know. And I think the fact that we paired him and Magruder is an interesting one, because Rodney is a perfect example of knowing your role and not trying to do too much. Like for the first half of the season, when he was inexplicably starting games because so many players were out due to injury, he just was really a defensive bulldog. Look, there were matchups that he, you know, quite frankly, got dominated in because he's, you know, 6'4" on a good day. He's not going to be capable of handling bigger forwards and things like that. But, you know, he understood that what was required of him was to be the occasional catch and shoot player, a 3-and-D type player, and to guard opposing scorers. And then slowly but surely, he understood within the course and context of each game that maybe it's okay to drive to the hoop. Maybe it's okay to make plays for others. And we started to see flashes of that in the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that didn't help. It coincided with Miami's 30-11 record during that stretch. So he was one of many improving factors throughout the course of the year. So for Winslow, if he's going to lose the secondary ball handler role And that's fine. I mean, we thought that that was what was best for him, but we didn't expect Dwayne Wade to return midway through the season. So I think for him, he just has to understand that when he goes in there, it's all about playing, let's say, 15 to 20 minutes of really, really good defense.
Can he be that other backup guard? Or is that – I wonder if it's just too packed back there when you're trying to work in guys like Ellington and Magruder maybe back – coming back, and Wade obviously coming off the bench, Tyler Johnson being there starting right now. I wonder if there is a situation there where you could play – I mean, playing Winslow and Wade isn't the best situation because of the floor spacing, obviously.
Sure.
But maybe when Wade is on the bench, you know, waiting to come in for Goran Dragic, you're playing – you know, maybe you're giving – and look, we did see this. I will credit Spoelstra for this in the last two games, or maybe it was just the last game against Philadelphia. They started giving Justice Winslow the ball more in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Allowing Josh Richardson and Goran Dragic to play off the ball, and that helped their spacing a little bit. I think that's how you help Winslow. And I think you're right. He needs to really lean into just being like, hey, I'm the Andre Roberson of the starting unit. Richardson over here, Dragic over here, that's our offense. Those are our main guys. When Olynyk comes back, maybe he's one of our main guys in the starting lineup, depending on how that changes. I'm gonna shut down the best player on defense. And offensively, I'll handle the ball a little bit. I'm gonna set good screens. I'm gonna rebound hard. And I'm gonna do all these in-between things that create winning basketball plays that Spoelstra likes to talk about so much. But I do, you know, you mentioned him embracing that. It really also falls on the coaching staff to design that and find what it is, because they've jerked him around between four different positions this season, literally four different positions he's played this season. And they need to just settle on something. And I think they did up until the Dwayne Wade opportunity came up.
Yeah.
And understandably, you go get Wade. But at some point, you've got to make the guy who you pick 10th in the draft a priority. And I just feel like the Heat organization has failed to do that at this point.
Yeah.
And they need to settle in on something with him.
You know, you talk about the return of Olynyk, and obviously we'll discuss him in our next episode. But, you know, I think, to be honest with you, I would prefer James Johnson starting at this point and Olynyk playing that bench role with guys like Dwayne Wade, and maybe playing alongside Adebayo and Winslow, and then having either Tyler or Ellington there as the other guard. Like, if you have Wade in there as your backup point guard, him creating playmaking opportunities, which has always been a great part of his game, for other guys that are great scorers, and it doesn't really matter so much as far as Winslow's, you know, negative impact on offense, because he can just go in there and be like a really staunch defender off the bench. So he'll shut down opposing second units, and then you have guys like Olynyk and Adebayo who can score in bunches, and Ellington, of course. So I think that really is what would be the most effective secondary unit.
I agree with you. We'll talk about that more on the next episode in part two of this. And just one other note on Roddy Magruder before we wrap this up. I think there's a tendency of Heat fans, I've been seeing this a lot on Twitter, like, oh, he shot X percent from 3-point range and that'll help Miami this season. It's a different offense, guys. Like, there's not – Roddy Magruder is not going to be able to stand in the corner as much as he did last season. This right. is not the driving kick offense. He's going to have to learn how to come off screens and move a little bit more than he did last year, because he didn't really have to do it. Like, he kind of stood in the corner last year, and then when the shot went up, he would crash the glass really hard and try to get rebounds, and that was a really effective way of him playing his role, but he's going to have to – find a different ways to score, similar to what we talked about Luke Babbitt incorporating him back. But we'll talk about Babbitt too on the next episode. That's as good a time to shut this one down. That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with part two of our roster rundown, which will include Miami's front court players. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.